The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
Welcome to another episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am not your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tim has taken the week off. He's got places to go and people to see. In his place, we have at least one half of the Comic Book Chronicles foursome. This is at Agent_70 on Twitter. I've got the captain seat tonight. With me is at @PCN_dirt on Twitter. And joining us tonight is an esteemed guest and colleague, is at @MattWang97
on Twitter. Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Matt. It's always nice to have former guests back on, especially now that the one thing that you, the item that you plugged is now is in distribution now. What I'm referring to is the Kickstarter you came on an earlier episode of the Comic Chronicles to promote, and that was the game Emergence Genesis. Tell us about what the current status of the Kickstarter is and the game and the distribution.
Great. So, it's currently at the distributor right now. We are distributing to all the backers. A lot of our domestic backers have gotten it. I'm actually going to hand deliver your copy to you, Agent 70.
Awesome.
We're currently in the middle of distributing to our international backers, and we're talking to the distributor about a launch date of right before Thanksgiving. So, we'll definitely get one over to Dirt and his cat, a copy of the game to Dirt and his cat suit.
Nice. All right, we're gonna try to get together, and I'd love to see my copy of Emergence Genesis in hand. I know that you showed me a preview copy while when we were hanging out at New York Comic Con.
Yeah, I mean the art's beautiful, I don't know if you know, but Steve Ellis did most of the art, and Steve Ellis just announced his new AMC Into the Badlands comic. He had previously done some AMC Walking Dead, AMC Breaking Bad, and AMC Better Call Saul comics. And, the designer of the actual game, and hopefully I can come on the show and bring out a copy and bring my partner Brian on, the designer of the box, actually, and the cards, he does a lot of work for Yu-Gi-Oh! And has previously done work on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. So the whole package is just a beautiful package.
It looked really nice. It did look nice. Thanks for letting us know where Emergence Genesis stands right now. Before we move on, I wanted to take care of our usual plugs and promo bits. Please visit PCN_dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com, and you can follow the Pop Culture Network Twitter feed at @PopCultureNet. Make sure to visit the Click Nation's website, www.theclicknation.com. You can follow at Roddy Cat, who is the fourth member of our usual foursome, on his Twitter account, and the sci-fi / comic / nerd news feed at News Nerds Need on Twitter. We are also a member of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can actually catch up with me. It's a little dated now because my beloved Mets did lose the World Series. You can catch up with a special edition of the classic team-up between myself and at the Libra Icon and at Classic Materia as we spoke about the Mets just before the World Series started. It was in the 5 days between the NLCS and the World Series, so we had a lot of time to hang out and talk smack about who we were going to face, and unfortunately we ran into a Royals team that was just put out a really good effort and beat us to pretty much every punch. But make sure to catch up with the Classic Team Up and all the other shows on the Cold Slither Podcast Network on CSPN.us, and you can hook up to the feeds, the various podcast feeds, through iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Podomatic. So make sure you look up our show and all of the other Cold Slither Podcast Network shows. All right. Dirt, are you with us? Dirt is not with us. Dirt is having some technical issues. I really do hope that that there are no crazy weather systems approaching Dirt's geographic area at this point. Oh, there is one more plug I wanted to put to get in. Please help support the podcast by going to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop and buy various products that are emblazoned with the Comic Book Chronicles logo and some of the other logos from our brother and sister shows on the CSPN network. So make sure you go there. As Dirt will let me know, will let us all know when he is back up and running in full, we're going to hit the cinematic news that has come up since our last show. So apparently, you know, there's been some talk about what the next solo Batman movie is going to be about. And apparently the rumor has emerged that the next Batman movie reboot is going to be, quote, under the Red Hood, and it's going to incorporate some of, some of the aspects of the of that character's story from the comics into the next Batman solo movie. So we'll see where that goes. It could be until the year 2020, which sounds like it's so very far away, but technically it's not, since we're running right up on 2016. Only a few months away. So
yeah, that's an interesting choice. I would think they would probably, you know, I think personally I might have gone with Robin and Son rather than this Into the Hood, because Under the Hood requires you to know a little bit about the Robin mythology that the movie audience might not understand. And, you know, with the Nolan trilogy, they had introduced Ra's.
Right. Well, you know, I it's hard for me to speak about these DC movies because I'm so nonplussed and unenthused about, you know, about where they're going. I'm definitely taking much more of a wait-and-see attitude with the DC Cinematic Universe movies than I am with the Marvel ones. So, you know, I'm willing to let this play out, but it's still a long ways away. I want to see how Batman versus Superman comes, you know, how that turns out before we you know, even think about some of the future projects. All right. So, yeah, we'll just drop a little bit of a tidbit here. Dave Bautista, otherwise known as Bautista for WWE fans, and for Marvel Cinematic Universe fans, you know him as the actor behind Drax the Destroyer. He actually spoke to MTV International and dropped a kind of a funny cameo that he and as Drax and even Rocket or Groot could make in an upcoming Star Wars movie. And basically they would be extras in a cantina type scene. And I thought, hey, you know, corporate synergy, there you go. That works, you know, that works on so many different levels. It works on very many different levels.
It'd be like a live action Disney Infinity game.
Oh yeah, sure. Oh, you know what's funny about that? Matt, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think in the, you know, in the near future, especially given the fact that my understanding is that this Disney Infinity game is fairly popular.
Yes, and it's one of the best sellers for Disney right now.
You know, and what I was going to kind of allude to is the fact that you see it in all sorts of stores and Best Buy, and it's all, you know, it's at GameStop, and you know, you think that the intellectual property is just being, you know, spread amongst all these gamers who may not be all that familiar with the characters, but at this point they're familiar with them from this game. Who knows? You know, they would appreciate this, you know, these Easter eggs in a future Star Wars movie, and they'd actually get it. So, all right. Let's see here. So I guess there was some footage from AMC's Preacher shows. It was a full trailer, I guess, or first footage of the full trailer was revealed
Sunday.
This week.
Yeah, last Sunday. All right. Walking Dead.
Ah, see, I haven't been able to catch The Walking Dead live for quite a while, so I've been watching it on the app and online. So I did not see this this trailer. So I take it you saw it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Preacher. It's a funny story. I think initially when it was coming out, I was a little repulsed by it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Arseface will repulse anybody, right?
Yeah, it was that. And kind of like, I never you know, I was a Vertigo fan, but, you know, there's a lot of violence there. It's
sure.
Very Garth Ennis-like violence, and people were, the world was introduced to him, and, you know, I grew to love it. I gave it another year or two before I went back to the series and started collecting in trades and then started collecting the ongoing, the trailer got me. The trailer definitely got me excited. I think the lead doesn't remind me of Custer, right? That was Jesse Custer, right? Jesse Custer, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, but I think he seemed like a good actor. You know, I wish his hair was a little bit
wilder.
Wilder. And people seem to be very excited for the guys playing Cassidy. So
okay,
I'm not familiar with him, but the trailer was fun and it was fine and it was violent.
Well, you know, AMC does have a little bit of leeway being a cable channel for that stuff. So, hopefully they can make good use of the property. Let's see here. So there's a bunch of articles about Constantine, and I know that Constantine apparently appeared on this week's Arrow. Finally, I guess the crossover has come to fruition.
Hello.
You're coming in loud and clear, Dirt.
All right. Does anybody here watch Arrow?
Nay.
I'm behind. I'm very behind.
I didn't watch it for a long time, and I've been thinking about getting into it because of Flash. So I just started watching Flash, and my son really wants to watch it. So I'm going to watch the arrows that go with the episodes of Flash and watch those in order. But so far, I haven't gotten into Arrow yet. So I think Tim and Roddy Cat both watch Arrow. And of course, they're the two not on the show.
Of course. Well, they'll be able to talk about it next week. So the Supergirl pilot is free to stream on numerous internet services, Voodoo, iTunes, and Amazon. That's a great way to get the episode into people's hands. I mean, it has already leaked, so. But, that's a great way to get.
The one that leaked months ago, that pilot episode that leaked, like, what was it, May or something? It was a different edit. So there were changes from that to what actually aired on TV.
Which makes a lot of sense, right?
Sure. Sure, and if anything, I was about to say, if anything, the leak gave them a chance to put it in front of test audiences, and they probably monitored all of social media and websites looking for negative feedback or positive feedback to see what they needed to stress or change.
The first few episodes have been fine. They've been, they're kind of remind me of early Flash.
That's a good comparison.
It's very upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of positivity in it. It's a very, clean... if you always think about the comics, you had Superman versus Batman. Superman was always, forward-facing, sunshiny, much more of a positive type book, clear blue skies as he's flying along. And that's what Supergirl has really been pushing for, is that, much, much happier day-to-day life.
Right.
Nobody's painting their fingernails black. Nobody's cutting themselves. It's much happier... happier world. You just have to fight some bad guys now and again.
Gotcha.
Hey, Agent 70, can you hit the spoiler bell really quick?
All right.
I really love the fact they introduced the DEO.
The DEO.
DEO Speedwagon?
Ah!
No, it's just one of those DC organizations where Chase used to work, and they've announced they're going to introduce Cameron Chase.
Right. So, Supergirl, so far to me, has been fairly enjoyable to watch. The small continuity changes that they've instituted, they rankle you for like a half second, maybe a couple of seconds, and then you just sort of move on from there. Otherwise it's, like you guys said, it's a pretty upbeat, positive show to watch. It's funny that you bring up the Flash, and I've been trying to catch up, and I believe I'm completely caught up with Flash now. I've been trying to catch up like half episode here and there the last couple of days. And, the Flash, it seems, especially with the way the new season has developed with the 52 Breaches and the Earth 2 villains coming over and introducing all these characters, it seems like it's each episode is kind of filled to the brim with new characters and Easter eggs we're supposed to pick up on. It almost feels like there's a bit too much. I don't know if you guys have been catching up with The Flash, but that's generally my feeling with it right now. I hope Supergirl kind of takes its time introducing these characters.
They've introduced a lot, I think, already with, it seems like every kind of supporting character in Supergirl has a wink-wink nod-nod to the DC universe.
Right.
But not as much as The Flash. But I just worry a little bit about hopefully casual audiences will not get turned off by all these supervillains of the week on The Flash and realize why The Flash universe is so great.
Sure. All right. Next up, we have news that there's a Star Trek TV revival in the works. So, you know, that's pretty exciting because it's been a while since we've seen any regular Star Trek episodic television.
Although, aren't they doing it for an online service?
They're doing it for their non-broadcast TV service. It's about $6 a month. I think it's called CBS Now, or I could be wrong, but one of the interesting things about the service is that they offer all the Star Trek episodes from all these different series. And what the president of CBS TV said when he told his international salesperson about it, they've already funded half the production of the show by the international sales. And a large majority of the people subscribing on the CBS service actually spend a lot of time watching Star Trek.
No kidding.
You know, my big concern.
Because that meme of Captain Picard going like this and saying "Why?" is probably getting a lot of interest. Rekindling a lot of interest in Star Trek: The Next Generation. You know, that's got to be part of it.
My concern as a Star Trek fan is which continuity are they going to use, the movie continuity or the TV continuity?
Isn't it all canon? Isn't it all there because of the way they did the alternate timeline thing?
Well, yeah, but the question is, are they going to set it in
right. In
the original timeline or in the Abrams timeline? I mean, technically, yes, they both still exist, but you got to pick one to put your series in.
Right.
Yeah. And I still think Deep Space Nine is the best one, so.
I agree on that one.
I don't know if I completely agree with that, but I definitely see your point. I definitely see the argument that can be made.
The Dominion War, the Defiant, Captain Sisko.
Listen, Captain Sisko sat there with a baseball and tried to teach Jake, his son about baseball. I mean, I thought I'd love that. So, but anyway, moving on. I don't know if you guys saw. There's a couple of news bits about the Doctor Strange movie that is currently filming in Nepal. Nepal. I want the knife. That's a Golden Child reference to the 80s kids out there. So Michael Stuhlbarg, the actor who is currently on screen as Apple engineer Andy Hertzfeld in the Steve Jobs movie, is in talks to join Doctor Strange. There's the role that he would be auditioning for is in the running for is being kept hidden. At this point, in other Doctor Strange-related news, there's some images of Benedict Cumberbatch, the erstwhile Doctor, who is kind of bearing a strong resemblance, in my mind, to Shaggy Bruce Wayne in Batman Begins, if you guys remember that, right? Christian Bale, Shaggy, in wherever the hell he was at the beginning of that movie. That's what it reminded me of. But yeah, it's pretty cool to see that this movie, it really is being made and it's really out there. So, those are some cool images to see. Ken Marino is joining season two of Marvel's Agent Carter. This actor, the wet hot American summer star, is going to be playing a mob boss, Joseph Manfredi, a volatile leader in the Magia crime syndicate. That's a definite shout-out to old-school Marvel continuity. The Magia is a stand-in, obviously, for the Mafia. And that's pretty cool that they're using Agent Carter to kind of fill in some of the old-school Marvel continuity and, dropping how these organizations and characters really did exist in, previous to the Avengers and the Iron Man Marvel Cinematic Universe continuity that we know now. These organizations existed, maybe even are precursors to current iterations of these particular groups. Who knows? Maybe we'll see the Magia, rear its head at some point, when Hydra's not doing anything on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Or the Netflix series, right?
Exactly. It makes sense for it to for the Magia to appear on the Netflix series because those are the street level quote unquote shows. I thought this was actually pretty cool news. Ralph Fiennes is voicing Alfred in the Lego Batman movie. So that's a pretty good get for Alfred there. Although I'm surprised that Michael Caine wasn't available. So sources say that Hugh Jackman will be on hand for X-Men Apocalypse. And there's some more that you can read at Film School Rejects. Now, forgive me, I wish Roddy Cat were here because I think that this was confirmed, but I'm not sure. Nicole Kidman is up for a role in Wonder Woman, as I think Queen Hippolyta, and that would be a pretty cool thing to see. It's a nice role for her to pick up.
I was really surprised at that news. An actress of her caliber on the Wonder Woman movie.
Well, DC may, you know, Warner Brothers may be picking up on the idea that they need to put in some of these kind of name actors in even the minor roles, like Anthony Hopkins as Odin.
I think it's really exciting. I actually think the actress for who's playing Wonder Woman is a great pick.
Oh, Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too far into that. That's another. That's like a whole show of conversation about casting of some of these DC heroes. But it's cool to see that these name actors are not that they're slumming it, but it's cool to see that they're willingly picking up these roles. Of course, they are getting paid. Mark Wahlberg's The $6 Billion Man is getting a release date. So it's going to be released on December 22nd, 2017. Are you going to go see that, Matt?
Crickets.
How about you, Dirt?
Yeah, as soon as it hit Netflix and I don't have to pay money for it,
Sounds about right. That sounds very much like my plans for it. Let's see. Don't need to talk about that. So, Star Wars character posters were released this week, and I'm sure they got the Star Wars fans in a tizzy. There were 7 of them total. Han, Leia, and a trio of youngsters. I believe Kylo Ren was there also. It's hard to get more excited, or it's hard to get the Star Wars fandom even more excited about this, about the movie, because believe it or not, Christmas is not that far away anymore. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. It's very frightening.
I have an extra ticket at Battery Park City if you want to come with me on Thursday night.
I may take you up on it.
Yeah, my sister and I will be there. And she's already promised lightsabers for us.
Oh my goodness gracious! That sounds like some fun, man. But like I said, they drop these posters and I find it hard to believe that the Star Wars fandom can get any more excited than it already is. I know that Dirt is cautiously optimistic.
This is very much true. I mean,
having been burned 1, 2, and 3 times, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was say. Remembering how much excitement I had the first—well, not the first time around, technically the second time around.
Right.
Now that it becomes the third time around, I'm just gonna sit back and let things kind of cool off, and then decide if it's worth a matinee price, a 3D price, or a Netflix price.
Right. All right. Matt mentioned this earlier. Supergirl cast Buffy alum Emma Caulfield as Cameron Chase,
who's one of my favorite characters in the DCU.
Cool.
Did you guys ever read her series?
She had a series.
Yeah, it was a writer that only comic writer that doesn't write comic books anymore, and then J.H. Williams, and they basically introduced like the DEO, which is sort of like the shady superhero monitoring organization. They kind of resurrected the Suicide Squad, and Cameron Chase actually showed up in Manhunter, that series with the female Manhunter for a number of years too.
Okay, all right. So I'm looking forward to the Supergirl cast expanding and developing. So I like Supergirl's the sister's character. Does she exist in the comics also? Kara what's the sister's name?
Kara Danvers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I read Peter David's Supergirl run, but I never really read the later run. They introduced kind of her extended Kryptonian family, so I don't know.
Gotcha. All right. Let's see.
I want to say that she's been in there.
I believe so too. It's just I'm not sure about the name. So not sure about the name, and it kind of bugs me that her human name is Danvers. I hope that doesn't cause any confusion when Captain Marvel finally drops.
Oh, good point.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, but that's always been her name. So
has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't. I don't go back with Supergirl that far, so I can't say for sure.
Linda Danvers was always.
Now it's starting to come back to me. You're right.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I'm excited about Hank Henshaw, so.
I'm just hoping that Streaky, the super cat, makes an appearance.
Like, oh, no!
And what was the horse?
The angel horse, right?
Well, she had the flying horse for a while. I just can't remember.
With the Peter David run, that was also an angel, that one?
Well, I mean, it's... No, I mean, Silver Age.
Silver Age. Oh, yeah. that.
Yo, Streaky the Cat, Crypto the Dog. Wasn't there a flying...
Comet the Super Horse.
That's
God. Yes, so, yeah, they brought Comet back.
That's funny.
To the right before the pre-52.
That's funny.
Comet first appeared February 1962. There you go.
Wow. Okay. Let's see here. So The Flash has earned its highest ratings in season 2 so far. The most recent episode, Darkness and the Light, had the best ratings for an episode of The Flash this season so far, beating out Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is kind of, I think, struggling with establishing where the story is right now. I don't want to get too far into that because I don't know if I want to spoil too much of what's happening. I personally didn't see the twist that happened in the most recent episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's probably because I'm sort of like half episode behind or basically a full episode behind at this point.
Yeah, I'm the same way, so
I didn't see that twist coming, so I was definitely surprised. Forget mildly surprised. So there's a rumor that Marvel's going to turn Iron Fist into a Netflix movie and go with a Punisher series instead, without going into the entire without going into all the notes that that Roddy Cat's so wonderfully inscribed. What do you guys think about this?
That's been the rumor for like the last month or two, because you know, it's cheaper to do a Punisher movie, a Punisher TV show.
I like the Punisher. I've always liked the Punisher. So.
Well, same here. But I would like to give.
I've always liked the Punisher more. I'll even put it that way.
I'll give you that. What I wanted to say.
You have a much broader appeal, but.
That too. What I wanted to say, though, is I'd like to see them give Iron Fist a shot, especially using a lot of the stories that that Fraction established and Brubaker and Kari Andrews, you know, a lot of the mysticism that they established. I'd love to see that come into play. But at the same time, I understand, you know, practically speaking, the Punisher is probably a better idea to put into a series.
Yeah, the most recent, the Kari Andrews Iron Fist movie comic, he basically said, I created a comic that they can never reproduce in a movie. That's why he was just making as badass and action-oriented as he could.
Yeah, he definitely did a good job with that. When I spoke to him, at Special Edition, and he definitely was glad to hear positive feedback. And at the same time, I said, well, you know, I can't remember the exact conversation. I would have to go back and check my notes, but you know, I was impressed that that the mysticism and the technology, you know, I thought that was like an underlying current in the story. And you know, it was kind of cool to see him manipulate that, you know, in the Iron Fist story. So I like. You know, just to wrap up that conversation, I'd like to see them really explore the mysticism of the Iron Fist character in Kun Lun. If the movie's the best way to do it, more power to it. All right. So Star Trek's Alice Eve has revealed interest in taking on a Marvel movie role. Apparently she was up for Peggy Carter and didn't get that. And they may be looking to cast the Enchantress, so who knows if she's up for that. They actually courted her for a role in X-Men as Emma Frost, but that didn't work out. So we'll see if they cast her in anything. She's not the worst looking chick in the world.
Really?
You know, that works for me.
Way to take a stand.
You know? Snoopy's gotten a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. This story actually made it on the 1010 Wins radio news this the other day. I thought that was pretty cool. Good job, Snoopy. And finally, wrapping this up, we have, I referred to this earlier, the Constantine appearance on Arrow gave the show a nice ratings bump. So that's pretty cool. All right, so I'm going to jump in at this point and do a quick ad read. I'm going to do a promo read for, as it comes up, waiting for it to load, Skull Candy headphones, waiting for the bloody thing to load, and we will go. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link, click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today. There's our first ad read. So now we'll kind of go past the clickbait. Thank you, Roddy, for putting that in. We're going to get to the comic book news. Dirt, do you have this up?
I do not.
Dang it. I guess I'm going to have to keep going. All right.
Wait, you want me to pull it up? What's going on?
No. It's all right. I'll finish out the news run. I'll go through this very quickly. IDW Publishing announces the departure of Alan Payne, VP of Sales. He's stepping down effective immediately. Marvel announces Venom Space Knight number one, although I think we knew this already because I was very disappointed that they're reusing Space Knight with Venom and not Ron, who's now at IDW. Marvel teases a Haunted Mansion comic series under Disney Kingdom's banner. There we go, some more corporate synergy. Oni Press presents Kaiju Max Season 2, a prison drama with monsters. Ah, so many jokes there. So many jokes there.
I'm just hoping they have an Alabizi Kaiju with a little hat.
Oh, no. Oh, no. All right. I love this. Roddy's notes and basically drop the fact that this mature audience prison drama is built from the dreams of kaiju lovers everywhere, with one part HBO's Oz and a little dash of Orange is the New Black. Oh, boy. Let's see. Stan Lee's Kids Universe unveils Dragons vs. Pandas, first international installment. Yikes.
Seems like an unfair fight.
I know.
It's going to be in English and Mandarin, debuting in the U.S. and China. It's going to be a Saturday morning cartoon, iPhone game, lots of, they're putting a big push behind it. Like, it's going to be the next big thing as far as they're concerned.
Dragons versus pandas, oh my.
And the two
big Stanley probably has only 1%. Say in that, and
well, 1% creative, probably 40% of profit, you know.
Right. Speaking of Stan Lee, there's a Hot Toys Stan Lee figure that is frighteningly accurate and bears a very, very strong resemblance to Stan the Man himself. I did see images of this online, and it's pretty frightening.
Here, I'm going to pull it up right now. Let me.
You can put it online for our viewership.
All right, here we go. This is. Stanley.
Yeah, that's pretty scary.
That's real good.
That's the toy.
Listen, Hot Toys is no joke, man.
Oh, yeah, they have some great looking stuff. There it is right there. Look at that toy. That's scary. The action figure. That is not a photograph of Stanley.
Yeah, I have one. I don't usually collect toys, but I got a Iron Man last year for Christmas. Hot Toys Iron Man. It's gorgeous.
Although, I'm kind of thinking, what creepy stalker wants this Stanley lifelike toy in their home?
Yeah. That one's going to be a pretty tough sell.
I'm trying to figure out.
Roddy Cat was tweeting with me. He was talking all about this, how he needed one, you know?
Good job, Roddy.
Is it Man Crush Monday?
Oh, no. That's funny. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. They have a web shooter pose hands. That's pretty cool.
The watch is removable, by the way, just so you know. That's how much detail goes into these things.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Who came up with the idea?
I don't know.
He has a ballpoint pen. He's got regular glasses and the sunglasses. He's got a director's chair and then the various hands that you can put on.
So Matt, you were mentioning that you actually own a Hot Toys figure. Is it on display or is it still in the box?
In the box.
In the box.
In the box in the office.
Gotcha. I was very tempted. I happened to walk through Toy Tokyo not too long ago, and I happened to see a Hot Toys. It was a Captain America Winter Soldier figure with the blue costume, and I was very, very tempted to pick it up when I saw it in person. It's one thing when you pass it by in the con and you don't want to carry it, you don't have time to stop or whatever, and it's just so crowded. But when you're in a store and you actually have a chance to just stop and examine what it looks like and kind of talk yourself in and out of getting it, I really came to appreciate the handiwork and the craftsmanship that Hot Toys puts into these things.
You went to the Toy Tokyo on 2nd Avenue?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they have great stuff on display.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Into the Badlands, the AMC TV show has its own comic, and you can read it right now. It's digital. The first few pages are available to read on the AMC's website right now. But that's Steve Ellis doing the art?
Yeah.
Nice. That's very cool.
These are just JPEGs in a gallery. If you want to, you can totally download these and read offline at your leisure.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool what AMC is doing with a lot of these free comic books.
That is cool. And that's a Lionel Yu cover that you were just showing.
Yes, indeed it was.
Yeah, they're not afraid to get real good artists for their comic books.
That's cool. Very nice, very nice. All right.
They should do a comic on Walking Dead, because that's a good show for AMC.
Oh!
They actually have an AMC. There is an AMC Walking Dead comic, and Steve Ellis did it.
That's probably
they're actually zombies
right now.
They're actually zombies in it.
Yeah. Dirk, can I tell you that joke would fall on deaf ears in any place other than a comic book store. You know what I'm saying? Like if you said that in like my office, they'd be like, "What? There's a comic? I can go get it? What?"
Oh, I definitely believe it. I mean, like I said, there are people that walk into our store all the time. Oh, they're doing a comic based off Walking Dead. Wonder if that's anything like the show.
All right. So moving on, Joshua Fialkov talks Pacific Rim comic and the epic Bible of the series. I actually liked, as bad as some of the acting and the story actually was, I liked Pacific Rim just because I was a fan of the fight scenes and, you know, it was just a lot of fun, I thought. I don't necessarily think I want to read about the characters, though, and the backstory, so we'll see if I catch up on the Pacific Rim comic. But it's nice to see that, you know, it's going to be, you know, at least the properties going to continue now that Pacific Rim 2 has been kind of put on the back burner. Mm-hmm. You were saying, Rose? Oh, no. All right.
Hello.
Moving on.
Okay.
Moving on. Star Wars Rebellion board game will arrive in 2016. Woo! Good grief. The Humble Peanuts bundle has $171 worth of DRM-free Charlie Brown books.
Yeah, actually, it's pretty awesome.
Nice.
I actually picked this up the other day.
Really?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it will continue to unlock more stuff as time goes by.
That's cool.
But my son is huge into Peanuts. My daughter enjoys it, but my son is really big into it. So
he's getting a new deal.
Yeah, he's getting a new tablet for Christmas, and when he opens it, it's already going to be charged, and all the stuff will be downloaded on it, ready for him to read.
Dirt, before I move on, I have a question for you. When you say he's getting a new tablet, is it new and larger than the previous screen that he had?
Well, he's going from a 7-inch to an 8-inch, so it is a little bigger.
A little, okay.
But it's the one he has now. It's a Samsung Galaxy, but it's only got 8 gigs of storage space, which is really hard for him when he's got a bunch of games and stuff.
Sure.
So he's getting upgraded to one with more space, more RAM, better processor. You know,
gotcha.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I know that on the show. I actually went live on the show and talked about what tablet I wanted to get, and I ended up getting a 7-inch, you know, Google Nexus tablet, and it's awesome. It works great because I can hold it in one hand and read our preview copies. But every once in a while, I'm tempted to get a 10-inch or larger tablet.
Ooh, yeah. This is a Lenovo.
Oh, nice. So, you know, I was just kind of curious to see if you were upgrading from a 7-inch to a 10-inch or larger.
You know, they both had, I gave them both 10 inches a couple of years ago that were both ones that came into the store nobody ever picked up. So after, you know, several months of them not coming for them, then they became ours.
They got repoed.
Yeah, basically. So I gave them to him, and my son, he ended up breaking his, which luckily, though, I went online, registered the serial number, and found out they actually had an extended warranty on it. So we actually got a gift card in the mail to cover replacing them. But he didn't like having one that big, and so he got the 7-inch one. My daughter has the other 10-inch one. That it's a similar model. It's an Asus. It's a very nice tablet. Everything still works fine on it, even though it's a couple of years old now. But she says that she actually would prefer going down to a smaller size.
No kidding.
Is it because of the hand size?
Yeah, part of it's that. Part of it's just because, you know, when they go over to Grandma and Grandpa's house, it's just so much easier to take the smaller one, throw it in a book bag, or you know, keep it in their hand, carry it with them. Having the bigger one is much more cumbersome to them because it is, you know, like, I don't know, a fifth of their body size. So it makes a difference. They like having the smaller one that they can kind of curl up with.
Right. I mean, and, you know, it's the same, for me, it was the same idea. You know, I needed to have something I could basically hold in one hand while commuting. So, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the concerns are very similar.
Yeah, well, because I ended up getting my hands on a Kindle Fire a while ago, and it's one of the 7-inch ones.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's one that if I'm wearing my cargo shirt in the summertime, I can actually slide it into the pocket.
Absolutely.
So I can have keys and phone in one pocket and the tablet in the other pocket, and you're good to go.
Right. I can even slide. I can put. I have a Bluetooth keyboard attached to and a case attached to my my Google Nexus 7, and I can actually put this in my raincoat pocket.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to work. And it's inclement, or if it's just a little chilly out, and wearing a raincoat on top of work clothes or whatever, I can put this into the pocket and it goes right in, and so, and even the inner pocket. So it's a nice size for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, enough of
both.
Exactly. I was going to say enough of our tales of our tablets. Moving on.
No, let's start a tech show. Technology Chronicles.
Then we really need to get sponsors.
We got to hurry up and get to reviews here.
Yeah. We're almost there.
All right.
We're almost there. So Exo Man of War is returning as an international thriller in the kill list. Okay. Funko Pop is now owned by the people who own Spencer's.
Oh.
Interesting. Let's see here. I can skip that. Oh, there's a new Comic-Con. The Silicon Valley Comic-Con is coming in March of 2016, and some name guests appearing: Jeremy Renner, Nathan Fillion, Stan Lee, the man, of course, Sean Astin, Ray Park, William Shatner, Christopher Lloyd. That's a pretty good list so far of stars, and I'm sure there's going to be comic book creators and guests there as well.
Yeah, you just basically just named one comic book creator just now in that list.
Yeah. So let's see here. Blah, 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 da, da, da. Okay, that's it. Yay! We're done with the news. Let me get my second ad read in, and then we can get to the comics. All right. We will do Amazon as I wait to have this loaded. So now I understand why Tim sometimes has a pause when he's trying to pull up these the ad reads, because there is a pause as they load.
Well, you should have them preloaded.
Well, now I know.
Wouldn't that solve that problem?
It would solve that problem. So, help keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment, dollar bills, that help keep us, the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, free to our listeners, $3.99 at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. All right. Cool. We made it. We are at our comic book reviews. So what'd you guys read this week? I know that we talked online about a couple of books.
I just realized right now that Star Wars came out this week, and I haven't read it.
Yes, it did come out.
Now I feel bad.
Because there's so much out this week.
That's like someone saying, oh, your song was on the radio 5 minutes ago. You just missed it.
I'm sorry. I would have let you know sooner. This week was so big. There is not one, not two, not three, but seven number ones released by Marvel that had hip-hop covers. Extraordinary X-Men number one had the De La cover by Sanford Green, former guest of the Comic Book Chronicles. Howard the Duck, the Juan Doe, Old Dirty Bastard cover.
Hey, isn't that the print you got? No, okay.
Yes, I did get a print of that. I did get a print of that cover. This is Kari Andrews cover for Deadpool number one. The Hercules number one had a hip-hop cover. Drax number one had a hip-hop cover. Nova number one had a hip-hop cover. And last but definitely not least was the Visions hip-hop cover, which is very dim and dark. I'm going to try to put it in the light, by Vanessa Del Rey. So there were seven of these bloody things out there. Dirt, did your store have any of them?
Unmuted. Okay, there we go. We got the Nova. I think that was the only one we got.
You didn't get the Extraordinary X-Men one? The best
nope.
one.
Nope, we didn't qualify for it.
Oh, that stinks. That stinks.
It's just one of those things that unless you want to sit down and do a half hour of research, you just randomly say, okay, let's order some and then see if you get them or not.
I gotcha. All right, so what did you guys read this week?
I think I only put like two books on the list, so pick whatever you're going to pick and then...
No, we'll talk about what you read, because it looks like you read Vision number one.
I did read Vision number one.
And I think everyone else did too. Oh, you didn't read it, Matt?
No, I'm just curious. It sounds like
you're off the show.
Ah! That's funny. So Vision number one is actually a very surprising read for me. It's a and it's actually a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. And I know that Roddy Cat was definitely considering that as his Click of the Week. It looks like Tim read Vision number one, and you know, he mentions that Tom King is a rising star writer.
What else has he done?
Grayson.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's on Grayson. I think he's on. He's got a project with Mitch Gerard. It's called, I think it's the King of the Sheriff of Babylon.
Is that a new Vertigo
book? Yeah, it's a new Vertigo book. Tom King and Mitch Gerard. They're definitely down to come on our show, by the way. Both of them. So, you know, maybe we'll reach out to Tom King about the Vision number one, because I think I like this book.
No, I enjoyed it too. My problem was, though, I am not well versed on Vision's history.
Okay.
And so when it got to the end of the book, there was a lot of what the heck is going on? Wikipedia, Wikipedia, Wikipedia. What's the connection here? I don't get it. Wikipedia, Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, do a
lot of things. All right. So I'm gonna ring the heavy spoiler bell. Because one of the notes that Tim brings up is that there is an appearance here by the Grim Reaper.
Not the real Grim Reaper.
Right. Marvel's Grim Reaper, and
that's pretty convoluted.
Right, but you have to kind of figure out how the Grim Reaper is quote unquote related to the Vision, and that is touched upon here at the end of the book. But the premise of the book is that the Vision, if anyone read Avengers number zero. The Vision has basically erased the bulk of his emotional memories, and he's basically developing new ones. And to help him with that, he has created his own family of synthezoids. And, you know, you can see them on the cover. There's no spoiler involved here because it's right there on the cover. The Vision's basically created him for himself the nuclear family, a wife and two kids. The story itself was pretty engrossing. I really got into it. What about you, Dirt?
Yeah. Honestly, this was one of those things that I had no plan on reading in advance. It just happened to be one of those books that we ordered a bunch of copies and not one single person asked for it, reserved a copy.
Right.
So I just thought, well, you know, poor little unloved comic. I'll read a copy. And I was actually really pleasantly surprised by the thing that got me, and this it kind of took a while for me to realize what was really drawing me into the story, but it was the narrator's voice.
Yes.
There's just something about the way it's speaking. Well, one, you don't get an outside narrator like that in comics a lot of times nowadays. It's an inner monologue, if there is anything going on, and this being an outside voice narrating the story really made it feel like something different. But it also, it's speaking in a voice that's very cold and robotic as well. And the way it's detached emotionally from what's going on plays into the feelings that you have about these androids that are having a hard time dealing with their emotions, being humans, dealing with humanity. There's a, you know, detachment that they have that they're trying to make that connection, and you have this narrator's voice that's very cold and very distant and unemotional about the things that it's talking about. And it came across almost feeling, I don't know, like it added an extra layer of, I almost felt like this is Vision himself narrating this in another part of his psyche that's another separation, like another disassociation from
right. It's another level of his programming that is kind of commenting on this as it's happening.
Right.
Or recapping it, really, because it felt like it was being told in the past tense.
Right, like something, and of course there's something terrible that it's coming to.
Right.
And it talks several times about something horrible that happens to people later on, and mm-hmm. something, you know, this is only the first of the terrible things that happened in this block, or, you know, things like that. So it has that feeling of foreboding also going through it while you're watching these things try to be people. And
right.
So it worked on a level that I didn't expect it to, and I enjoyed it much more than I ever thought I would.
I'm inclined to agree with pretty much everything you said, because that's how I read this. I really got a kick out of the detached, emotionless narration, and you know, as the story went along, I found myself curious to see where this goes next, and that was the key. That was a running theme through a lot of these all new, all different number ones this week, where they basically ended every book with a page that says, "Are you interested in finding out what happens next? Here's a teaser." And I for one, was very interested, and very interested in seeing what happens in issue number two. So I hope we didn't spoil too much for you, Matt. I would definitely recommend that you give this issue a shot.
Yeah, no, I'll pick it up next week. I mean, you know, you intrigued me with the cliffhanger at the end. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with the Vision history, so that's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got a convoluted one.
That's the other thing was, there were several books this week that I enjoyed, but they felt like a lot of the story that you got in, you know, 22 pages of the comic was 10, 15 minutes of story, whereas this felt like I had watched the pilot episode of a new series. Like this, the story in this issue has a beginning, middle, end, even though it is an arc, even though it ends on a cliffhanger, like it follows that feel of a TV show where you get to the end and you feel like, I've gotten the first chapter of this story. Like, I've gotten an entire story's worth, as opposed to some of the other comics where, you know, you've got three pages of a guy walking just to get to his destination because they want to, you know, do atmosphere or whatever. They've wasted, you know, an eighth of the book of just showing a guy walking. You don't feel like you're getting your whole story's worth. This felt like it had a whole story's worth, you know, in a single issue, which is a hard thing to come by these days.
Agreed. All right. So that's one book.
Well, what about other Marvel number ones? Did you read any others?
Sure. Matt, did you happen to read any of the Marvel number ones this week? Because I'll run through a bunch of the stuff that I read.
Nova.
Okay. It's funny that you bring up Nova because Nova is based the number one of Nova read to me like Dirt's criticism of many of these number ones, where it felt like we weren't getting much story here. We definitely got like a first chapter in an arc, but we didn't have like a solid story being told in three acts in one book.
This issue definitely. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was just going to say it's definitely built around the cliffhanger at the end,
right?
And the reveal at the end, the spoiler, which I won't spoil.
Don't worry.
But it's definitely all designed to lead to that moment. And if they had that moment anywhere earlier in the book, it would have kind of ruined the surprise of that. But at the same time, they couldn't really do anything,
right?
Because that is going to be what everything kind of hinges on going forward.
Right.
So you've got a lot of just wheels turning.
Yeah, like minor. I was about to say minor wheels turning, because what it is kind of reestablishing what Sam Alexander's status quo is.
Right.
Right. But he's in a new town, right? Or he's in the same town because he has new friends. Because that whole crew of friends was a new group.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not up on the Nova book itself. So,
but I can tell you that I let my son read this because he loves Nova from the Spider-Man cartoon.
Right,
Nova's a regular character on there, so he wanted to read it. And the fact that it's a father-son comic, and he read it and I read it, it's like now Nova is a thing we're going to have to follow through on.
Okay.
So, whether I like it or not, I'm reading this series until he loses interest.
But one question about it. When you were reading one of the scenes, did you think the father was Rich Rider for a second? Because I thought that when I was reading one of the scenes, the action scenes, I kept thinking Rich Rider.
Really?
It's been so long since I've read Nova that I really didn't. I pretty much went into this one with a clean slate of Nova. Like, I know the character from what I read in the past, but I was pretty much going into this one with, it's going to be nothing that I'm familiar with, you know, just empty my mind and start from the beginning.
Well, you know, I think I read an article at some point where they basically let it slip that the Richard Rider, or at least more about Richard Rider, is going to be revealed as the story in this book progresses. So.
Yeah, it was the Comic Book Resources.
Oh, is that what it? Okay.
Yeah, Comic Book Resources this week, yeah.
Okay, all right. Matt, you read Extraordinary X-Men number one, right?
Yes.
You want to cover Uncanny X-Men 600 because I think we can't talk about Extraordinary X-Men number one without talking about Uncanny X-Men number 600.
I think there's a little bit of a debate here between Dirt and I on Twitter about this issue.
Yes.
No debate. It's terrible, but whatever.
I really don't know how to feel about this issue yet. I'm probably still trying to digest it. I just wanted to let it be known that there's some cool variant covers for this book this week. I happened to splurge a little and pick up the Art Adams cover, which is pretty cool.
Paid but a little extra for that one?
What's that?
Did you pay a little extra for that one?
Nay.
Oh, wow.
And the one cover that I picked up in one shop but was curiously absent, it may have sold out at Midtown Comics, the main branch, was the Lionel Francis Yu cover, which is an homage to the 90s X-Men.
Oh, wow. That's a good cover.
Yeah, this one was pretty cool. And I'm not surprised that one is the one that if they did have a sufficient supply at Midtown, was the one that went first. So, but all right, back to the book itself. So what are you guys debating about? What didn't you like about this?
I didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was a good ending for the Bendis run. It tried to tie up a lot of... It didn't tie up every loose end, but it tried to tie up a lot of... Thematically, it felt like it was a good end to his run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That seems to be what Tim has said in his notes that he left us. Tim basically enjoyed this a lot more than he thought he would, and that each short story that was within the larger story wrapped up an ongoing arc that Bendis had started during his run.
I won't debate whether or not it does a good job of wrapping up what Bendis has done. Mm-hmm. I think Bendis has had a disastrous run on the X-Men, and I'm glad it's over.
That I agree with. I am not a fan of Bendis' run on the X-Men.
I don't know. I think it's I think we have such high hopes for his run because he had a good Avengers run. Mm-hmm. But I thought he definitely had some high points. I thought all his time travel stories were a lot of fun. I thought the evolution of Beast throughout the entire run and all the mistakes he made was. I think a really good storyline. It made a lot of sense, and I think when they were talking about in the story, I don't know if it was a spoiler, but the fact that the other X-Men were hinting, now we can see how you become Dark Beast.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was all very logical. And was this run as good as the Grant Morrison run? No, but did it have great moments? Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm definitely in Dirt's corner to the extent that I'm not a fan of Bendis' run on the X-Men in general. Do I have them all? Do I own them all? Yes. But I also own the whatchamacallit, the He Who Shall Not Be Named, who destroyed so many X-Men issues. I've shoved his name out of my memory.
You mean Chuck Austin?
What's that?
Are you talking about Chuck Austin?
Yes! Oh, you had to bring it up.
I mean, that run was gold compared to this.
Oh, no. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Oh, my God.
I would not go that far.
Did you just say, isn't Chuck Austin the one where She-Hulk and Juggernaut have a one-night stand? And then Angel has a sword?
Yes.
You find out that Nightcrawler actually is like the son of the devil? Or
yes. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
And what Angel and whoever, like...
Paige Summers.
Husk.
Yeah,
Paige
Guthrie. They get in the sky while Mom is watching.
Yes, Paige Guthrie, Husk.
That was the most seminal and...
Oh, my God. Run. Chuck Austin gets the gong.
He gets
all right.
The gas face.
Seriously. Seriously. So following up on Uncanny X-Men number 600, we have the subsequent X-Men book in All New, All Different. We have Extraordinary X-Men number 1.
Or, and, as people called it all day on Wednesday, the Extraordinary X-Men.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Which made me go, so they're really ordinary? Like, they're not just ordinary, they're extraordinary? Like, this is the most bland and boring version of the X-Men ever?
Mercy. That's funny. That's funny. Anyway, so we have our X-Men where we find them 8 months later, and Storm is in charge of the Xavier School, and we have the ramifications of the Terrigen Cloud. As you can see it on the cover, I'm not spoiling anything. That's the green cloud that's on the mist that's on the cover. There have been some unfortunate, unforeseen side effects of the Terrigen Cloud on the mutant populace, and that is going to be the catalyst for this story. And on the last page, the part of the story that I really, the part of some of the developments in Secret Wars that I really don't like is this character appearing in current Marvel continuity.
Old Man Logan?
Yeah, I mean, he's on the freaking cover. Am I really spoiling anything?
Yeah, you're not spoiling anything.
You know?
Well, because I was going to ask if there were any hints given as to how he survived Secret Wars to make it into this reality.
Nope.
Okay.
Oh, no, but that was in the story.
Well, at
that
the end of issue 5, Old Man Logan issue 5, right?
He was in the Marvel. Yeah, he finds himself in, he basically makes his way through all the different realities of Battle World and then makes his way to what we presume now, spoiler alert, is the core of what survives.
Hmm.
You know, he makes it to what I presume is what the core of what survives, and what I'm referring to is probably Earth 616 and whatever the number is for Ultimate Earth, because those are the two realities that are pretty much getting smushed together.
I want to say it's 1620, but I'm not sure that's right.
Right, but the point is that he makes his way to what I believe is 616 in the Marvel U, and that's how he survives what I presume to be the destruction of Battleworld. Hmm. All right. Let's see here. What else did...
Well, go back to...
What? We're still in Extraordinary?
Yeah. I mean, just... Oh,
fine.
Are you going to keep reading it? Are you only going to read it because you can get review copies? Are you not going to bother reading the review copies?
I'm going to keep reading it because I'm a longtime X-Men fan. I'm still not sure if I'm going to be reading Uncanny X-Men because that's going to be like bad guy X-Men / X-Force. That's going to be kind of traumatic to the collector side of me because my uninterrupted run of Uncanny X-Men may very well be interrupted.
I like this title. It reminded me back of like the roots of like why I love the X-Men, right? They're hunted. People don't like them, mm-hmm. You know, and the world's against them. And that's the X-Men I like. And, you know, they have a lot of familiar faces and, you know, a couple of new faces, and we'll see what happens. I think this is like the second most excited, the X-Men title I'm second most excited about.
Is it because you live your life as an outlaw?
Yes.
In
yes.
From the outside.
What's the first one that you're excited about, Matt?
Well, the one you were just talking about, you want to drop the Uncanny.
The Uncanny with the bad guys?
Uncanny X-Men with Matt, you know. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I'll give it a shot, but like I said, I'm not confident. Not confident. All right. So where are these other number ones that we can hit upon very quickly?
How about Drax?
I did not read that.
Okay.
I skimmed it. I can't speak. I
mean, it's all right. Very well. It does tie in with Guardians and mm-hmm. with, you know, Groot and whatever. It is definitely part of that universe. It's got Outer Space Venom. It's got Thing. It's got Kitty Pryde as the Star-Lord or Star-Queen or whatever mm-hmm. she is. But it is one of those books that I was referencing earlier where he's on a spaceship and the ship crashes and you've got, it's like 4 or 5 pages of him welding something on the ship. It doesn't work. So he sets off for the city and he's walking through a desert and he's walking through a valley and he's walking through a place where all these dead bodies are piled and he's walking through these burned out trees and he's walking through whatever. He walks to the edge of the town. He walks through the town. He walks to a bar. He walks in the bar. And it was just like page after page of mm-hmm. just, you know, walking, walking, walking. And it's like, how much, this was a, you know, $4 for 22-23 pages of story, and you know, you've got 3 or 4 pages of him just walking through this landscape, and none of it matters.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to show that he walked a long time.
Right.
And this is why I wish they'd bring back those little dialogue boxes. So he set out on his journey, which took him a day and a half, and you can just show him walking once and then be done with it. You know,
yeah.
It's just that modern problem. But I felt it did a good enough job with. It felt like the character. It felt like Drax. It tied in to Guardians. It was violent. He tore stuff apart, got into fights with people. So, I mean, as far as it fitting with everything else, there's no problems there. But it just didn't move at any sort of pace like it's trying to get anywhere soon.
Right. You know what's funny? I skimmed this, and because I skimmed it, I kind of forgot all these valid points that you're bringing up, Dirt. And now that I'm flipping through it again, I realize that I skimmed it because there's not much there.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that much... it didn't have much to make my way through this.
And I wish, because Groot is often sent out on his own thing now with his own series, I wish it was Drax and Rocket Raccoon.
Mm.
Because the idea of having the jokester and the straight man, the small amount of interaction they have in this issue was enjoyable. I wish there was a lot more of it. And
right.
I think that would have been much better as the series going forward.
It's an interesting... Listen, I don't think I would have bought this had it not been for the hip-hop cover. I don't know if I would be reading this going forward. There is a cliffhanger at the end of this issue. It's not enough to convince me to read the next issue.
You have to buy it because it's from WWE World Heavyweight Champion CM Punk.
Nay. Nay, I do not. Although, speaking of a book that I will be looking at issue number 2, I will definitely be looking at issue number 2, is Hercules. Did you read Hercules, Dirt?
I did not.
You really should.
I generally have zero interest in Hercules.
What's awesome about that is that you can come into this with a clean slate and I think learn to appreciate this. You really don't need to go to Wikipedia to understand Hercules, you know, talking about something that you mentioned earlier, right?
Right.
You have to, you know, we all have a real basic understanding of Greek mythology adapted by the Romans. and you know, what we learned in like English in like junior high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all you need to know about this. And about mythology to read this and appreciate it. There's a couple of really cool story elements in this, you know, because this is Marvel's Hercules, and he has kind of had a tumultuous history in recent, you know, in recent comics. You know, he's kind of created a bad reputation for himself. But one of the cool bits in this comic that I thought really, you know, what was well done is that Hercules is now residing in Astoria, Queens, where there's other Greek people. That's, you know, it's one of the Greek enclaves in New York City. And he's living in an apartment with, you know, in Astoria. And one of the cool things, one of the cool drops in this, the cool Easter eggs, is that the forgotten warrior Gilgamesh makes an appearance in this, and he may very well be kind of a comedic relief in this. It's really very well done. Believe it or not, I actually found myself enjoying this book a lot. And, you know, the art is definitely a high point for me. It's I think it's, you know, it's not like the most detailed art in the world, but it's, you know, I think it's very well done. The creative team on this, I'm trying to locate because I did pick up the hip hop cover. This is Dan Abnett writing this, mm-hmm. and you know I'm a big fan of Abnett and Lanning doing Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think Abnett's got a very good grasp on where he wants to take this tale of Hercules and kind of Hercules' place in the modern world. And Luke Ross is he's a seasoned veteran of pencil work on. At Marvel, so there's definitely a good, solid foundation for this book. I'm trying to not spoil everything, but the general premise, I believe, is going to be based on what happens when demigods or gods kind of lose followers. If I'm not mistaken. But also, you know, kind of Hercules finding his way in the current reality of the Marvel universe.
Hmm.
So, you know, I definitely, listen, this is a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. I enjoyed this. I did not read this until my ride home tonight, and I found myself smiling and laughing on my way home reading this. So, don't hesitate, Dirt, and to pick this up in the shop tomorrow. And for you, Matt, if you want to swing through, you know, Midtown, or whenever it is you're paying off your pull, quote unquote, you know, to pick up a copy of Hercules number one and just kind of thumb through it, and you'll see what I mean. It's actually a fairly good story, and yeah. I'm definitely intrigued by issue number two.
We have a tweet from Roddy Cat. He says, didn't Hercules die/get depowered? Is any of that explained, or is that elsewhere?
It must be elsewhere.
Okay.
Must be elsewhere. There's not much to it in here.
Didn't Hercules take over, like, Hulk for a while?
That was a while back. That was when Greg Pak was still doing it. That's a long time ago. That was post-World War Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's how closely I follow Hercules.
Well, listen, Hercules really hasn't had much to do.
That was a good run, though.
For a long time, then even I've lost track of the character. So it's nice that Herc's got kind of a clean start in this. So, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by the book. Don't sell the book short just because it's, you know, just because of the character. I think it's a very well done story.
The Greg Pak run, I'm kind of in the first year on Marvel Unlimited. You should check it out. It's pretty fun.
Oh, it is. It is. It was very good. With Amadeus Cho as basically, you know, the foil. Exactly. Exactly. Did anyone read
There was also Deadpool number one.
Yeah, there's a Deadpool number one. I didn't finish it.
I read it. It's an interesting setup. He's basically made a team of Deadpools. He's got a bunch of other heroes and / minor villains that...
Like B, C, D, F, G level characters. Basically doubling his Deadpool.
Ray.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of humor at the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. There's humor in the middle of the book. But then when you get like to the end of the book, the humor just goes away.
Yeah.
And the final...
There's a serious turn. I just finished it.
Yeah, the final four or five pages, there's no humor in at all.
Right.
And it's not even that it's dark, necessarily. It just stops...
They're clear follow-ups to some of Duggan's previous work.
So the problem I had was like, oh, I kind of enjoy this. This is funny. Wait, this is not funny anymore. Who is this guy? I don't know who this guy is.
Right.
What's going on here? And then the actual final page I was fine with, because as far as Deadpool goes, it would fit with... with who he has been in the past. But I just felt like the issue lost steam at the end. Like, they decided there were too many plot points that they needed to bring up or tie together, you know, into this series. So you have all this fun stuff at the beginning, and then it's like, okay, well, now we've got to do our setups for where the storyline's going to go in the future, so they just drop all the humor and throw all that stuff in at the end, where maybe if they had woven that through a little more, you could have had those beats of humor all the way through the story instead of it just stop being funny at some point so they could tell a story.
Can I ask a spoily question?
Sure.
Does Stingray live?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, kind of.
Yeah, he does. He does. He does. Although he does get played for comic relief.
He may have broken his neck, but he lives, yeah.
Stupid Stingray. And finally, the last number one was Howard the Duck number one. I only cracked it open, but you got to put up the hip-hop cover because this is one of the best hip-hop covers out there. The top two of this week were the De La and this one, the Wando Old Dirty Bastard homage.
Yeah, I did not crack it open.
All right, so that covers the number ones. How about the number twos and threes? Anyone read Doctor Strange number two?
Yes.
This was very, very good. I really enjoyed this. I'm enjoying Doctor Strange, this iteration of Doctor Strange. I think Jason Aaron has found a very convincing voice for Doctor Strange, and even Wong.
Yeah, the cooking scene.
Yes, I really appreciate what Jason Aaron brings to the Marvel table now, because, you know, he's definitely one of the key architects of the Marvel universe at this point. And you know, if anyone. What's that?
We're all tweeting back and forth, so we hear these beeps going off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'll turn the sound down on my phone, but the premise of this is that you know, it's a continuation of issue number one, where we have a female character who is seeking out help from Doctor Strange because she's got some kind of gross things growing out of her head. And what we find out is that these gross things are very much parasites, you know, mystic parasites, and that they shouldn't be even on this world. And, you know, that's definitely going to tie into further issues down the road. There is an overarching mystery that's still developing. It only develops on the last page and a half of this book, but it's still there from the first issue. A lot of the banter and the dialogue between I'm looking for the female character's name, between the female character whose name I'm searching for,
Wong,
thank you, between her, Wong, and Doctor Strange is very, very well done, and the narration as well, you know, is very well done. So, you know, this is a definite candidate for Click of the Week for me. I know it's a candidate for Click of the Week for at least one other member of the panel on the Comic Book Chronicles. What do you think about it, Matt?
I really enjoyed it. I think I like the first issue a little bit better.
Really?
But I love the team. I think this was a team from Wolverine and the X-Men, mm-hmm. and which was one of my favorite X-Men runs. And look, the people. I think a lot of people forget that Chris Bakula did Shade and the Changing Man with Peter Milligan in the mm-hmm. 90s to help launch Vertigo.
Right.
And you know, this is a book he's born to draw, which is why I think we all love it.
Yeah. It definitely fits the atmosphere. I mean, listen, I was only vaguely familiar with Bakula's work on the Changing Man. Like many people, I was introduced to his work on Generation X.
Right.
And, you know, while it was good there, it's an X book. It was kind of an offbeat, quirky X book. But this book should be, you know, you can hand this book to someone who's not a comic book fan and say, look, this is about magic and stuff. Read this. And I think they would enjoy it.
I like the Easter egg on the cover where you've got the letters on the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. On the freezer, you've got the TWO because it's issue two. And then you've got the names there, Aaron, Bakalo, Townsend. And then it says ICDTKO for Ditko, Steve mm-hmm. Ditko, who actually created Doctor Strange. I thought that was a nice little thing to slide in there in their jumble of letters.
That's very cool. I didn't even notice that, but that's what I get for reading on a little screen, right?
Mm. See, that's why you got to get the 10-inch tablet.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I, you know, heaven forbid I actually look at the physical copy I picked up.
Hey, they're actually coming out with, I think it's a 15-inch Android tablet. It's going to be coming soon from, I think maybe it's Asus.
Wow, they got to catch up with the iPad Pro, right?
It's like a touchscreen computer.
Goodness,
so you can pick it up and carry it with you. So maybe that's what you need to go for.
Maybe. I may have to go like completely in the other direction, right? You know, I'll go from like completely portable to completely not portable and being the jerk on the train who doesn't know how to fold the New York Times, you know, just like banging into people with this tablet.
There's no way it would ever get stolen.
Ah, not out of my hands. Come on now. Let's see here.
Yeah, the Spider-Man, did you read it?
I did. I liked it. I'm a fan of where Slott is going with Spider-Man. Maybe I'm in the minority here.
No, I love what Dan Slott's doing too. I wasn't a big fan of this issue. It was good, but not as good as the first two, I thought.
I'm inclined to agree with you, but and here's the reason why I like this issue. I like the fact that we learn more about how about who is in what positions at Parker Industries. I like some of the interaction between Johnny Storm and Peter Parker / Spider-Man. Like I said, some of the interaction, not all of it.
Some of it fell off, right? Yeah, that's what turned me off.
Yeah, some of it definitely fell off. So, you know, at least in that regard, I understand where you're coming from. The final page cliffhanger, I was not happy about. We all know that this character is bound to make a reappearance, but I was not happy about that last page cliffhanger.
It's is it the Superior Spider-Man?
No.
I'm not interested.
No.
It's like I was reading a Bendis book. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. I know that Invincible Iron Man is also a candidate for Click of the Week from one of our other members of the panel on Comic Chronicles. Did anyone else read this?
Yeah, it was good.
It was really good.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of this developing character who's kind of like out of nowhere?
His girlfriend?
Yes.
I at least like the idea that they're going to attempt something stable for a while.
Mm-hmm. That's not Pepper.
Right.
And not Mary Jane.
And however long it lasts, I mean, I don't know, obviously, right. But I like the character so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm fine with her sticking around. This is also another one of those books that my son really likes to read because he likes Iron Man a lot, and this one has been... This is kid-friendly. It's got some action, you know, in it.
But it's maybe not explicit. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's definitely
nothing,
not.
There's nothing really bad. I mean, he falls out of the sky, but obviously it takes him like 10 minutes to hit the ground, so he's got plenty of time to do stuff. But he's every time there's kissing on one of the pages, he's always just like, because he's 10 and he doesn't like seeing cooties on the comic page.
Big spread, right. That's funny. But I like the way they play Tony.
Well, I was just saying, I like the way they play Tony. I like how he's intelligent and he's strong-willed and he's still willing, though, at times to question what he does. You know, am I doing the right thing? Did I make a mistake here? Is this the right path that I'm on? I just like the way that they're dealing with the character. What?
Right. You kind of dropped out on me for a second, so I wasn't sure if you had stopped speaking. There was one exchange in the book that kind of high five. Yeah, I wasn't so keen on that one.
That was also my son's favorite part of the book.
But I know that that Tim left us a note saying that was an awesome that he really appreciated that scene. I did not like that scene.
There's something wrong with you.
Yes, there is something wrong with me because I am not happy. I'm not a fan of things that would make me happy. I found myself agreeing with Doctor Strange in this particular scene. Let's put it that way.
When you guys read this book, don't you feel that it's Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man? This is like the first time it's really Robert Downey Jr. Like Bendis is channeling him in this character.
I think they've been trying to do that for a while, but you see, like you said, that you see it in fits and spurts.
I think this run I've seen it a lot more than the last couple of runs, like even like the Fraction run. So I think this is the run I've seen it. Like Bendis is really trying to incorporate that humor and that, you know, Downey was an alcoholic in the past and a drug addict, right? Like you see
right.
that.
Right. Well,
this really is one of those books where if you had a friend who likes to watch all of the Marvel movies and stuff and they wanted to kind of get into the comics, this is an easy one to be, pointing out to them that, you know, read this, you'll like it. It's a good story. It's good artwork. It's easy to read. It flows. It's got the Bendis snappy dialogue that, plays in your head like a TV show or a movie. So this is one of the easiest mass market Marvel books that a new reader can jump in on.
How's it selling in the store?
Very well, actually.
That's good.
Iron Man has typically been a hard sell for us.
You were talking about that when you were ordering the number one.
Yeah, because it hasn't really been a strong seller since, I don't know, Civil War, maybe?
Right.
Years ago.
Yeah, all the runs since then just never seem to ignite anybody, and especially the last one, Kieran Gillen run, just everybody abandoned. That did terribly. So when they said this one was going to be coming out, it's the first one post Secret Wars that they're, putting a big push behind. They're taking the team from Ultimate Spider-Man and they're putting it on here. We really wondered, how well is this going to do? We've had to reorder the first issue 3 times now because people just keep coming in and asking for it and want to read it. Yeah, it's one of the few books where you had a couple people, wanted number one, and then we had a lot more people wanted number two. We've got more people that came in on number three, and because enough people wanted number three, we had to go back and reorder one and two again, for the people who picked it up with three and want to catch up with the first two. There's much more of a demand, especially because it's only a couple issues in. If it was 20 issues in, that'd be a little different, but it's a couple issues. People want to go back and grab those first two because it's gotten popular enough, it's friendly enough for a lot of these people. I haven't really read comics in 10 years, It's like, okay, well, this is a good one to jump in and get on. Unlike some of the other ones, the X-Men books, people who haven't read comics in several years pick up an X-Men book and their eyes cross. And they just, have no idea.
Those of us who read X-Men books on the regular are still looking at it and makes our eyes cross. So I know how they feel.
But I do feel like this one really is poised to pick up steam. The Avengers books, there's not a lot of excitement on. People want normal Thor, normal Captain America, which they're not getting, but Iron Man is still Tony Stark, and I think that helps a lot too.
Gotcha. I was about to say, I think they need to give Chick Thor a chance.
The Secret Wars, though, killed a lot of the momentum.
That's true.
Because there were people that were coming in and picking it up, and then Secret Wars started, and suddenly the book's not there anymore, and we just don't see those people. They were, not subscribers. They were just casual people that would come in, grab it off the shelf. And once they realized after the first, month or two that there was no Thor coming out with that character, then they just stopped coming in.
That sucks. All right. So, that covers most of what I read this week. I did read Justice League Dark Side War Superman number one.
Okay.
How was that?
It was...
okay, so I'm not picking that up.
Yeah, that's about as articulate as I can be about this. It was, I could see many of the story beats coming a mile away.
It was like an extended version of the Superman 3, where it's the evil Superman.
Yes. That's a good point, Dirk.
And I was really disappointed because I like the way he's played in regular
in the Justice League issues, yes.
And this just didn't feel the same. Like it felt like it didn't fit in that story anywhere. Like I don't see where this these specials, like the Batman special, the Flash special, are both tied in much more, where the first page comes from Justice League and the last page leads into the next Justice League, whereas this one is just kind of this random thing happening that doesn't seem to tie into the Justice League story at all. It just happens to be the evil-powered Superman out there. And Jimmy Olsen...
The corrupted Superman. That's what it felt like,
And somehow Jimmy Olsen is not the whiz kid video game programmer who had all that money. Now he's riding a dirt bike. He's wearing the bow tie. He's the nerd bringing coffee in the newsroom. It just kind of felt like, have we lost the New 52? Like, what happened? Like,
I noticed that, but I thought it was a very minor point. That's probably just the artist not. Well, that's an editor's problem too. They didn't pick that up.
But overall, it was not satisfying, and that's the biggest problem.
Tell us all about the Flash one, because that's one I actually wanted to read, because I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of
The Racer Flash.
Exactly, the entity that took over, without spoiling everything, but thank you. You know, the Black Racer taking over the Flash.
It's not a spoiler because it's on the cover, right?
Well, if you don't understand, you could think that was Zoom, you know, talking about the Flash TV show, right?
It did happen in Justice League, so
right.
Everybody knows it's already happened if they're, you know, keeping up with that at all. It's an interesting look at the character. Most of this book is the struggle within Flash to fight against the Black Racer as the embodiment of death, how he doesn't want to be tied to it, how he's trying to escape it. So it's much more of a character piece than it is a story piece.
Okay.
Because it begins from the moment he kills Darkseid, which happens like at the end of issue 45, I think, and then about the third or fourth page in 46, he's standing there like, I am the Black Racer, and he takes off. And this covers the few seconds in between. Mm-hmm. And because he's Flash, you know, time happens at a different speed and, you know, whatever. A lot of it is internally him fighting this godlike force, and it's almost like Ghost of Christmas Future, you know, taking him through time and seeing what could be and how he's fighting against this force, and then he has to embrace it, or other bad things can happen if death is just randomly unleashed. So it's a character study, but as far as advancing the story along, unlike the Batman one, which felt like it was pushing the story forward, and it was working the character through a storyline that gets him to a certain point where he will reemerge in Justice League, this was just much more of, what the heck does it mean now that Flash is tied into this death force? Mm-hmm. And so that's what you get. So if you're interested in Flash, or you're interested in Black Racer, and you want to see how this plays out between them, then it's interesting from that point. But if you're reading Justice League, and you want to see another chapter of that story, that's not what this is, and you're not going to get that out of this.
Okay.
So it was more satisfying than the Superman one, but both pale in comparison to the Batman one that came out last week.
Okay. All right. Thanks for mostly, you know, for giving me the heads up on the Flash one, because
mostly spoiling everything.
Yeah, that's fine, because, you know, I'll read it, but with an understanding that it's not as consequential, like you said, as the Batman one was.
We also had Detective Comics this week, which I had been enjoying. That's not to say that, again, this is a bad issue necessarily. It's just nothing special. Is really what comes out of it. They set it up as the Justice League had some sort of mystery that they needed Batman to solve. And because Bruce Wayne is no longer Batman, this is kind of a tryout for Jim Gordon. Is he good enough to be on the team? Can he solve it? And it was much more of a Saturday morning cartoon type of giant monster solving the mystery storyline. It was very simple. You know, it's done at the end of this issue. It doesn't feel like it really had any weight to it other than the fact that at some point, if they want to, they can have the Justice League reappear and be like, oh, well, we worked with this guy before, so he's okay. But, I mean, the story itself didn't add anything to the character. It didn't cement him as being part of the team. It didn't get him any real favors from anyone on the team that will tie into something big later on. It's just there. You know, if you like what's going on with Jim Gordon, then go ahead and read it. But, I mean, there's really nothing special to it. And gotcha. The artwork was a little lackluster in this particular one.
Is that Marcio Takara?
Yeah.
He's pretty on point. What was the...
It's just a lot of in caves and giant monster bones. So you just got a lot of scraggly lines.
Okay.
And shadow, and not really much detail of anything. And the monster, and part of the problem is the story he was working with, because this giant monster alien, like, spits out this goo and traps the Justice League in this goo. And so you just have these scenes of random Justice League characters just kind of suspended with bubbles coming out of their mouth screaming.
Jeez.
And nothing for them to do, really. So I think the story may have had something to do with that. But, yeah, it's just... You get done reading it, and it's like, okay, well, I've now read this, and now it is over.
Gotcha.
And time to move on.
I think the biggest problem with this, I'm flipping through the book now, I think the biggest problem is the color.
Maybe, yeah.
I think the coloring does not accentuate Takara's art, because if you follow Marcio Takara on Twitter, you see some of the commissions that he posts. Obviously, those are commissions. Those are static images, not, you know, panel to panel. You know, page work, you know, and that's those are two obviously very different creatures, but I definitely feel like the colorists and the colors in this book are not accentuating his work, or not helping it.
No, the variant cover is nice. You got a nice Looney Tunes variant there.
Oh, that is nice. So that cool. Thanks for putting that up.
They did. Yeah, this is Looney Tunes month from DC, so you're going to get a lot of Looney Tunes tie-ins.
All right. Matt, I know that you read Batman Eternal this week. Catch us up on what's going on.
I was very confused. The first half of the issue, like, I follow the Batman books. I've been reading all the issues. I know my Batman continuity. I don't really know the recent New 52 Tim Drake continuity, but the first half of this issue, I was like, I really didn't know what was going on. And the dialogue was throwing me off. I finally understood what was going on by the end of the issue, but it was very convoluted. There was only one redeeming quality about this issue. And it was for those old school Tim Drake Robin fans. There was a shout out. Dick Grayson uses an alias, Lyle Dixon, which is a shout out to Chuck Dixon, Tom Lyle, who did the first miniseries for Tim Drake Robin.
Okay.
But
that's it. That's the only good thing about the issue.
That was the only good thing about this
issue. Wow.
And I'm usually, I'm usually I'm an optimist, and I just that was it.
Is this one of those eternal issues that you can skip, or is there something here that you really need to read in order to follow through on the story?
I think you need to stick with this issue. Stuff does happen. Mm-hmm.
Because I remember in Batman Eternal, there were definitely issues that you could skip and still be able to stay on board the overall story arc.
I think there's some Tim Drake stuff here that you need, you might need, but... I was very disappointed.
Gotcha. All right. Is there any other DC stuff or any other stuff that you wanted to touch upon?
Not DC. I mean, that's pretty much going to do my run on DC there, but there were a couple other books I wanted to talk about. Let's see. First, John Flood. This is Justin Jordan's super intelligent private investigator detective guy.
That doesn't sleep.
What?
That doesn't sleep.
No, he does not sleep. He is insane. This is one of those books where it starts by jumping forward, and then it goes back to where you left off at the end of the last issue, and then it works its way back up to what you saw at the beginning of the issue, and you realize as it goes back to that point that you jumped forward to in the past, that makes sense, then... It was all leading up to something. You see how something was unfolding that you didn't realize was coming, and now here it is. And it ends with a almost like a Terminator-esque moment at the end, and I mean that in a good way. It basically does a whole lot of talking and exposition and leads up to what's going to turn into this huge, gigantic fight in the next issue. And so even though it's a talky issue, what they talk about actually gives you a lot of background on characters, gives you a lot of motivation, explains some of the stuff that's kind of been hinted at so far in the series, and then sets up for this huge showdown. This is issue 4 of 6, so it looks like the big showdown is going to be in 5, so then you have to wonder what issue 6 is going to have in it. But I like this series a lot. It's definitely one you have to read. You can't just, grab an issue 4 and read an issue 4. Like, it's 6 issues. It's meant to be 6 issues, but it's definitely a lot of fun, very enjoyable. I like it a lot.
Okay.
Should I go for the trade? Should I wait for the trade, or should I start hunting down these back issues?
Honestly, this is not a series that has gotten a lot of traction. So if you can find the back issues, you're going to find them at cover. It's not going to be like issue 1 is going to cost you $10 or something trying to catch up on it. But I mean, really, it comes down to how you like to consume your media. I prefer reading them in issues as they come out, as opposed to waiting for a trade myself. But if you're more of a trade person, sitting down on a weekend and reading everything in one shot, I think it works either way.
Hmm. Well, this looks like a perfect book for me, and like one of the cons, just sitting by the boom desk, getting signed by the creator and picking up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to a convention, then walk around the show floor and grab the issues. I'm sure you can find them all there at a decent price. But it's definitely a lot of fun, and it's going to sound weird, but there's no real connection between the two, but to me it feels almost like the TV show Psych. If you ever saw that show where you had a guy who had this uncanny ability to remember everything, and he worked with this regular guy, the two of them solved crimes. John Flood is this just insane weirdo who has this uncanny mental ability to pick up on small clues and string things together, and he's working with a former police officer who was a detective who knows some things himself, but he's really more there to be muscle. And the way the two kind of work together in that awkward buddy cop kind of way, to me it feels kind of like that show. There's no fake, mentalism or anything like that to it, and it's not... in-your-face humor like that show was, but, you know, it has that same type of dynamic to it that I enjoy.
Have they located that serial killer? I remember that was part of the early stories. Okay.
He's very prominent in this issue.
Okay. Because I remember enjoying the first couple of issues. Is this issue 4?
Mm-hmm.
I missed 3, so I need to catch up on 3. I did read 1 and 2.
Yeah, so. Basically, in 1 and 2, they're starting to converge, and then in 3,
there's a confrontation.
Well, it's like they're just one step behind him.
Okay.
But they're like right there on his heels, and then in 4 is when they start to butt heads, but then the building that they're in is on fire and coming down around them. So then they separate, but then the end of this issue is bringing them right back together.
All right.
Cool. And then one other book that I wanted to highlight. Oh, I guess there's 2 because I did read James Bond.
Oh, I read this too. I did read this on the way home.
Because, I do need to talk about James Bond, yeah.
Because Matt mentioned it and wanted to talk about it, so I did read this.
Matt, did you read James Bond?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was on mute. Yes, I did. I was very excited about it.
I've always been a big James Bond fan, and I walked into this feeling a little trepidation, mm-hmm. especially because the first 3 or 4 pages is, again, guy running, guy walking, guy jumping, you know, and I was like, oh, great, we're going to have another one of those books. But then once it got past that initial confrontation, then the story moved at a pretty good clip after that.
I was really excited because it was based on the novels and not actually on the movie James Bond.
Right.
I'm a big Warren Ellis fan. I subscribe to his weekly newsletter, and he's been talking about this a lot. And he actually spent a lot of time with the Fleming estate, pitching the story, talking about it. And he purposely is trying to move away from the movie James Bond. But he did admit that he kind of warned the readers that the first couple pages would be very much like a James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. I agree that the very first action sequence is reminiscent of some of the more recent James Bond, the Daniel Craig stuff.
Yeah. Well, but again, those were an attempt to push it back a little more closer to the novels. And I do like the fact that you have Moneypenny, you have M, you have Felix.
You have all, a Q. Yeah.
Shown and mentioned and whatever, but it's this version of them. It's not trying to be John Cleese, or it's not trying to be, you know, anyone in particular. The way even in the movies allowed Felix Leiter, sometimes he was a white guy, sometimes he was a black guy, just kind of depended on how they cast it, you know, what they wanted to build in their world. And this, again, takes things its own direction, where it's not Dame Judi Dench. You know, you don't have any of those recognizable characters. It's this own version of these characters. And I enjoy the fact that they play with that and they allow it to, you know, expand its own way out. One of the things that I thought was funny is in the initial battle, they're very obviously obscuring his face,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was funny because they're not trying to do Timothy Dalton or Pierce Brosnan or Sean Connery or, you know, anybody. It's their own version of Bond. So when you first see him, you're seeing his actions. You're not actually seeing the guy. Right. So there is no specific face or specific actor that you're, you know, putting into the scene. And so I appreciated the way that they played with that.
Right, that he was a character, but still kind of on the generic side because there's no likeness.
Right.
You know, and I definitely picked up on that. I definitely saw that they were kind of playing with the reader and your expectations as a reader, because I found myself searching for any kind of clue as to what likeness they might be using.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pleasantly surprised that it was kind of a generic, you know, dark and mysterious hero type, as opposed to a likeness, because then you're going to have all the Bond fanboys who say, that Bond sucked, this one was the best, blah, blah, blah.
Right. So it was definitely enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Of course, I like the story, and I like the premise of the story. You know,
it is one of those things, though, where you're getting these little snippets, and you're not really sure where exactly it's going in the big picture. But that's how a lot of the Bond movies play out, too.
I think it's enough. I think it's enough to make you pick up the second issue, though. So
yeah.
Well, Dynamite's really. I don't know if you read the description of the next issue. It's in there. In the book, mm-hmm. So they really try to entice you and bring you in. I love this book this week. I'm just very concerned that I don't want it to become a generic spy book. I want it to be James Bond. So hopefully, you know, Warren Ellis will be able to do that.
All right. Any other books that you guys want to talk about this week before we wrap it up? And either with rapid fire or before we get to clicks of the week.
I think someone wants to talk about Star Wars, maybe.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil it. I'll just say a lot of pieces are moving. It's a little bit better than most moving the pieces issues, and it's leading to a conclusion.
That's a good way to put it. I didn't want to talk too much about it because I know that Dirt is looking forward to reading this.
Yeah, I feel like an idiot because I forgot about it. Stupid.
Dirt, did you read this new Garth Ennis romance book?
No.
Okay.
No, I did read... Okay, so I want to talk about this book called 40 Coffin.
Dracula on the High Seas!
Indeed. This is from Space Goat Productions, which is the company that's doing the Evil Dead book, as well as others. They have other books, but Evil Dead is what the big license that's gotten them attention, so people will carry their books. And one thing I noticed about this book was, first of all, it's big. It's oversized, thick.
Okay.
It's $6.99, and it's 50-some pages, so it's a huge story. But I noticed, if you look, I don't know if you can see it on your screen, but down in the bottom corner, there's a little seal, a little white circle. And it says, this is a one and done. They're making it clear that this is a one shot. There's no sequels. It's not an ongoing story. You're going to get the entire story by picking up this issue. It's a one and done official story. So good, we don't need number two.
Nice.
What it says. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. The artwork, first of all, I'll start with, the artwork is very much in the vein of a Mike Mignola or Matthew Dow Smith. You can tell that there's some inspiration. If you've ever heard of the one of the master painters, he's named El Greco, who painted in this unique style. He traveled to Spain, places like that, and did all these paintings. It has very much that as an emphasis early on, and maybe that's me being pretentious art student, but anyway, this is one of those books that has mood, it has atmosphere, it's got fog, it's got ships on the water, and yet there's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of narration, there's a lot of story going on, and so even though you have scenes of ship in the fog, moving through the fog, moving past the rocks, those scenes aren't wasted. It's not just about the image. There's usually some sort of dialogue or reading a page from someone's diary or something that's going on that's adding to the story along with that atmosphere. So some of the things that I complained about earlier, where you've got these books that just have too much on the art and not enough on the story, this book overall has a good balance between the artwork setting the mood and the story explaining where people's heads are at, and they're going on at the same time, which is something I really enjoyed.
Was it worth the $6.99?
It is worth the $6.99.
Okay.
This is the story of one of those classic maritime legends where the ship comes into the harbor and there's nobody on board. Mm. Everybody's gone. Everybody's, you know, dead or missing or whatever. And so they find the captain's diary and they start reading through it, and that's what goes back and tells the story of what happened on this ship. The funny thing is, it says on the cover, Dracula on the High Seas, but the story is kind of told as if it's a mystery.
Okay.
Like, what's going on here? You know, what, we're carrying this cargo. It's just boxes of dirt. Who could care about this stuff? You know, whatever. So it's kind of a shame that they gave it away right there on the cover, but I guess they kind of have to in ways to, you know, market the book to certain people. There are certain people who will buy it just because it is a Dracula story. So,
of course.
You know, I guess you kind of have to do that, but it's a shame because the story is really well told. One of the things that bugs me when I read a lot of these books is when they're set in, you know, 1700s, 1800s, but the voice is still a modern voice. They don't give it, you know, the way Vision had that robotic voice, this does have that old English type voice to it, where you can, you know, hear someone with a slight English accent, you know, saying the words as you're going through. They use a nice script that's, it's easy enough to read, but it has a little bit of that calligraphy look to it, so you get that feeling like it's older. And the artwork, it's an artist I've never heard of before. His name is Jock, but it's J-O-K, not J-O-C-K, not the guy.
Yeah, I was about to say, that guy we know.
Yeah.
Is he the bootleg version, the counterfeit version of Jock?
Maybe it's his protege, I don't know.
His evil twin brother.
But the artwork is
with
really
the bat
cool.
Mustache.
And one of the things that he does in the artwork is all of the sound effects are actually hand-drawn into the artwork, so you don't have these overlays of this cartoony, you know, thwack or slash or, mm-hmm. you know, crash, whatever, that feel out of place on a lot of the modern artwork.
Wow.
This is drawn directly in. The artist is drawing those things directly into the page in the old-school style, which I appreciate. And there's a lot packed on each page. Like, as I'm flipping through the book, looking at each page, 10 panels on that page. 10 panels on that page. There's just a lot of stuff going on every page. And it's laid out well. I can remember being in junior high and reading How to Read Comics the Marvel Way.
Sure.
And one of the things that Jack Kirby did in that book was show how panels should move and flow from panel to panel. There should be things that draw your eye from left to right, from top to bottom, you know, to move you along through the page. And he does that. Like, he's following those rules. Like, he's sat down with that Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, How to Draw Comics, and, you know, took it to heart and figured out how to make these things flow that direction, which is something that I really appreciate that's lost on a lot of modern art books. So for a company called Space Goat Productions, for a book from a writer I've never read before and an artist I've never seen before, a one and done for $6.99, this book is great.
Nice.
How many pages is it again?
It's over 50.
Wow, okay.
And there's extra, some bonus stuff in the back. There's some sketches that he shows of some of the different characters of when he was working on how they were going to look. It shows an artwork from an artwork, a couple panels from a page that shows his original artwork before it got colored in and everything, so you can see how he laid it out. And his original artwork does not have gutters in between the panels. He draws everything and then goes in later and draws the gutters on top, obscuring the artwork. And it also shows that he made a 3D model of the ship, and then he would use that as a reference point when he was drawing the book. So when people are on deck at different points, he would spin the 3D model around so he knew how to draw it exactly, so that when you're reading it, your eye can actually follow the landscape of the ship as the people are moving through the ship, which I thought was a really neat idea. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, is he an animator? Is that where his background?
Not that I'm aware of. From the few things that I was able to find online about it, this is the first thing that's come out from a quote unquote major publisher for them. That's not just something that they did Vanity Press for themselves. So I was really pleasantly surprised by it. Flipping through it, I just liked the artwork, so I went ahead and gave it a shot. Reading the story, really good. So as surprising as it seems, with all of the number ones that we've gotten this week, 40 Coffins from Space Goat Productions is actually my click of the week.
Wow. That's high praise.
That's high praise.
That is high, high praise. Wow. All right. So we've got one click of the week out of the way. We will do the two clicks of the week for our co-hosts who are not in attendance tonight. First off, we have Roddy Cat's click of the week, which he was kind enough to provide to us. His click of the week is Doctor Strange number 2. Shout out to Roddy Cat. That's an excellent, excellent choice. I really did enjoy Doctor Strange number 2 this week. Tim passed along his choice for click of the week, and that is Invincible Iron Man number 3. We had a lot of good things to say about it. Tim really did enjoy that one scene I did not like with Doctor Strange, but can't do it. So that's two down, three down. I'll allow Matt to have the honor position of going last, but definitely not least. I will choose my click of the week now, and surprise, 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 my click of the week this week. The Vision number 1 is a very strong candidate, and I liked where the story's going, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Hercules number 1. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Hercules number 1 is my click of the week this week by Dan Abnett and Luke Ross. Shout out to you guys. Make me care about this character who's been kind of put upon for very many years.
So I had it narrowed down to 3 books. It was Doctor Strange, Invincible Iron Man, and James Bond. Mm-hmm. With James Bond, I love the issue. I just didn't like the end that much, so that kind of knocked it out. And it's a tough decision, but I think I'm gonna go with Invincible Iron Man this week.
Nice.
Wow.
Very cool. Very cool. You and Tim on the same page with that one.
But before we go, I Agent 70, I have a copy. I just wanted to show you this, because this is the actual real copy, and we can talk about it later. Oh, can you see it there?
Oh yes, Emergence Genesis. Look at that.
So We'll talk about it later.
Got it. We will talk about that later. So I wanted to thank our guest at Matt Wang 97. Applause for you. Matt, before we go, are there any plugs or mentions you want to make? Especially, I just shouted out your Twitter handle at MattWang97 on Twitter. Is there anything else you wanted to plug?
No, I'm just glad to be a guest on the show. Thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk about comic books with people who really know what's going on a week by week basis.
And us too.
Always happy to Joan Rivers it. God bless her soul. To guest host, if you guys ever need me, so let me on. Let me know whenever you need an extra body.
I'm gonna give you points for a Joan Rivers reference.
And hopefully, I'm gonna try to make it to C2E2 soon.
Oh wow.
There you go. All righty. So, for at Tim DOGG98, for at Roddy Cat, for at PCN _ Dirt, for at Matt Wang 97 this week, and for at Agent _70, we are the Comic Book Chronicles. We'll see you next week around the same bat time, around the same bat channel. And we are signing off. Peace.